Well, today we're talking about Paul. And last week, I think Ernie did a tremendous job of sharing about Paul's conversion and the fact that in Paul's conversion, Paul was a person who had to be, he had to be stopped. He had to be hit over the head. Any of you like that? You see my daughter over here? She loves it when I make an example of her. If we did not at 18 months old tell her she, or I don't know how old was she. She used to put, we used to put two beads in her hair, you know, little beads in her hair.
She was five.
She was five. She had two beads in her hair. At 5 years old, my wife, Carol, said to her, "We're going to change, you know, we're going to," that girl did not want to change her hair. She still doesn't handle change real well, do you? It was a battle. So Paul was kind of like that. Paul had to be struck down. He had to be hit over the head. And then you can see the amazing experience of Paul. So today we're talking about Paul's mission and his message. And what I was thinking yesterday, when I was contemplating today, is tell me some of the things that you value when, in your memory about Paul and his message. What kind of things come to you? Is there quotations? I mean, Paul was a prolific writer. He was a tremendous person in the understanding of the early Christian church and continues today. Paul is quoted probably as much as anyone in the Bible. You could prove anything you want with Paul almost. But what do you think, what stands out, what has been something that you've grasped onto and held onto over the years with Paul's message?
I've been learning a lot more about that.
Well, tell us what you've been learning.
Well, one way, and this is from George Knight's book, so I know, one way is describing him as a short, bald-headed man with a crooked leg. And, you know, that doesn't sound like the image. But another thing, Romans was written to a church that he had never met before. Most of them were written to churches that he had raised up.
Mm-hmm.
Thessalonica.
Corinthians. Uh-huh.
And but Romans he had never been to at that point. And the first, his greeting was, "I am called of God, and you know, no man has told me to be." And he also says he was an apostle, which you had to have a personal experience, personal meeting with God to be called that. The disciples were, but not very many other than that.
Okay.
Anyway, those are some of the things I've learned.
Been learning about Paul.
Another thing that I was very interested in the Ten Commandments, there's only one, most of them are instructions on what to do or not to do. But there's one, thou shalt not covet, which is an inward. You have to look in of yourself, into yourself to decide if you're keeping that. So that was another.
So you've been, was a class on Tuesday night?
I've read exploring Galatians and Ephesians.
Okay. How about the rest of you? What do you think Paul's message? What do you think of Paul and his message? How would you capitalize it? What would you say it is?
I love how in his prayers that he's praying for the indwelling Christ in the believer.
Okay.
And a lot of times when we pick prayer requests, we're praying for people that would be are needy, maybe they're not in the church or they're sick. But his emphasis on praying for believers. Just because they're believers, and like, God forbid that I've been sinning against you, I'm not praying for you. And then what he's actually praying is their lives.
Okay, so he prayed a lot. Yeah, Paul, that was a thing. Go ahead.
I think to me, Paul was a spiritual giant, and most of the principles that guide me in my personal life, I just look back at Paul.
Okay.
And more so, like, nothing will separate us from the love of God.
Okay, that's.
And then the other one is, I think we live in a society that is very materialistic. And one thing I learned from Paul that I try to apply in my personal life is happens to happen, and I've learned to be content.
Yeah, in all things. In all things.
If you apply those in your personal life.
That's true. Now, let's go to that first statement you had. You know, nothing can separate, I've revised, from God's love. Tell me what that does. What do you think that does in your personal life when you think about it? Nothing can separate you from the love of God. Hope and assurance. What?
Security.
Nothing can separate us. The last 2 days I've been in a trauma-informed clinical behavioral training. Cognitive behavioral training. And it's interesting that when you have trauma, what happens to the child or what happens to individuals? You feel disconnected. You start feeling like everybody's out there against you, where you start separating. You start having the experience like somehow there's... You have to start becoming leery about all kinds of... And then we develop different ideas. Paul's statement was exactly what you're trying to do if you're working with any individuals that has trauma, is to help them realize that that was a one-time event, but that's not an overall experience of life. So, security, hope, feeling that connectedness, that's what trauma is where it creates that disconnected experience. How about the rest of you? Anything that comes to mind, any statements, you know? Or what would you say the overall encapsulating thing of Paul's thoughts?
One that has always been helpful to me is in Philippians, when he says, being confident that Christ will continue the work he has started in you until the day.
Be confident that the work that God has started, he will not.
He will continue.
Once again, there's assurance. There's a recognition. I'm confident the God work that God has started, he will continue. You talk about a feeling of being regulated, feeling able to handle situations. Come on in. Glad you're here. Have a seat. Tell us your names.
Oh, I'm Joseph, and this is my wife, Lucy.
Hi. Lucy?
Yes.
That's an unusual name. I haven't heard that name in a while. The first time you've been in this class, isn't it?
No.
Oh, you've been here before.
Yeah.
You've been here. Well, I'm glad you're here again. Okay, so we're talking about Paul and understanding the kinds of things about Paul's message that has really created a foundation for the early Christian church and the church today. Is there anybody else that have anything that you think about? That when you think about Paul, that you kind of adds to your life experience, however it does.
It's strange that you think about Paul and the song.
Mm-hmm.
The drive that he had to, you know, against the Christians.
Mm-hmm.
And then to absolutely turn that around 180 degrees, because he must have been a very, very smart man.
Mm-hmm.
And you look at his writings, like you said, he wrote so much that influenced the churches today.
Mm-hmm.
In our lives.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing.
Yeah, and you know what? He had to really understand some of these principles in order to be able to go to these churches where he had killed maybe the husband of a woman there, or imprisoned people, or caused persecution. What do you think he had to really understand what it meant to be forgiven? And not just forgiven, oh, okay, everyone's okay with it. It's such an internal thing. I can let that go. That's one of the most difficult things we do in life, is letting something go. Go ahead.
When he was blinded, and his whole life was shook up, so to speak, he didn't just that quick head in another direction.
No, he did.
He said, I want to study this. As you say, he was probably a very intelligent person.
Mm-hmm.
I've overlooked something. Because I think he fully believed 100% that he was doing the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
That he was being the best Christian he knew how to be.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to put it that way. Then he had his wilderness experience.
Mm-hmm.
And it was during that time that I think he finalized that connection.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't lose his enthusiasm at
no.
all.
His personality did not change at all.
Regardless of whether he was on the left side or the right side.
That's right.
That was him. And when he came back as a different person.
Mm-hmm.
And when he went to the people in those churches where maybe he met the widow that he had killed, had her husband killed,
mm-hmm.
and talked with her, it wasn't just a bunch of rhetoric. It was from here.
No.
It was from inside.
Mm-hmm.
That he, I'm sure, apologized and told the story
mm-hmm.
of, you know, how he was changed.
Mm-hmm.
His life of commitment when he was Saul, his life of commitment when he was Paul.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's always impressive.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You know, when,
Go ahead.
You know, when Paul, Saul, okay, preached, one of the places he preached from was Mars Hill. Remember that? And Mars Hill, they didn't have loudspeakers in those days. And Balaam, my wife and I stood on the top of that hill, right where he stood. And boy, if you want a good impression of what Paul or Saul was like, because he had to have the volume that it took, just like Jesus did, that it took to preach to people in large audiences. You know, 3,000 and 4,000 people would be there. And we had to see it for ourselves, Betty and I, personally, when we went to Greece. And we also spent time on Cyprus, the island of Cyprus. We spent a whole week.
And that's a good point. The fact that you probably recognize there was these cathedrals set up in a way that they could hear them. Go ahead.
One thing that very seldom ever mentioned, and that is Paul became a leader of the church, but can you imagine how Peter, John, and the other disciples had love and faith they had to have to accept him?
That's a good point.
He went from persecuting them and literally physically chasing them
mm-hmm.
to them having to totally accept them.
Mm-hmm.
And the transformation not only within Paul, but also in Peter, John.
Absolutely. And you know what? There was conflict. Even after they accepted Paul. You know, Paul got upset with Peter because he was okay with eating with, quote, the Gentiles until some of the other Jewish Christians came along. And then it was like, oh, and so, you know, there was conflict. So this was real life experiences.
They had to accept somebody that was previously trying to kill them.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Ron, you had your hand up.
Well, I think it's easier for me to understand why God would tap him on the shoulder and say, I want to use you as a spokesman. You know, his talent, his background, everything about it. So he tapped him,
mm-hmm.
God used him, brought him through this conversion experience. But the thing that I can appreciate the lesson about, Paul was able to establish credibility
mm-hmm.
with different people,
mm-hmm.
Greeks and Romans, young and old, and so
mm-hmm.
on. And I think that's a concern, is the problem we have, you know, dealing with teenagers, they're not going to listen to you. I think human nature is such that basically we have to be skepticism.
Mm-hmm.
So if you stand up in front of a bunch of teenagers and say, I got something I want to share with you. And that's the thing that Paul was able to cut across those social lines and be so effective. And I really appreciate that.
In 1 Corinthians chapter 9, it talks about this very thing. If I were volunteering my service of my own free will, then the Lord would give me a special reward. But this is not the situation. For God has picked me out and given me this sacred trust, and I have no choice. Under these circumstances, what is my pay? It is the special joy I get from preaching the good news without expense to anyone, never demanding my rights. And this has a real advantage. I'm not bound to obey anyone just because he pays my salary, yet I have freely and happily become a servant of any and all so that I can win them to Christ. When I'm with the Jews, I seem as one of them so that they will listen to the gospel and I can win them to Christ. When I'm with the Gentiles who follow Jewish customs and ceremonies, I don't argue, even though I don't agree, because I want to help them. When with the heathens, I agree with them as much as I can, except, of course, that I must always do what is right as a Christian. And so by agreeing, I can win their confidence and help them too. And I am with those wholly conscious. I'm with those wholly conscious bother them. I don't act as though I know it all, and I don't say they are foolish. The result is they are willing to let me help them. Yes, whenever a person is like, I try to find common ground with him so he will let me tell him about Christ and let Christ save him. I do this to get the gospel to them and also for the blessing I myself receive when I see them come to Christ. What a powerful statement there. Go ahead.
Going back to what I said earlier, an experience that I had about 3 or 4 weeks ago. What Paul was doing, he wasn't doing to try to be this great person.
Mm-hmm.
He was doing what he felt God asked him to do.
Mm-hmm.
I think in some cases, he's probably going to be surprised when he gets to heaven. the overall impact that took place.
Mm-hmm.
How often in our lives do we share with other people the love of God
mm-hmm.
through the various means? I'm not saying go up and say, God loves you,
mm-hmm.
I want you to know this.
Mm-hmm.
But just in the way that we treat people and we deal with people. I was at Berrien Springs graduation in May, and they're remodeling the Billings Church, so everybody was in the recreation room, whatever you want to call it, that they build on the fellowship room. Had a good service, walked out. And there was a gentleman standing out in the lobby area, a black fellow that I had as a student. And he was as nervous as could be, trying to work his way through the crowd. And I thought, now you've been in that church, you know how crowded it can get. Because he wanted to make sure that he talked with me.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember being greeted, said hi. And his wife was there with me. And she says, he has been visiting ever since you walked into this church. He had to make sure that he saw you.
Uh-huh.
And he came over, and just to say, you changed my life.
Mm-hmm.
He got out of prison on one day because of the connection that I had in dealing with high-risk students at the university.
Mm-hmm.
I let him into school under a special program at the university.
Mm-hmm.
He's gone on. He's in your business now. Mm-hmm. He's counseling people tonight. And he says, you just need to know that because you cared about me,
mm-hmm.
it made a difference in my life.
Absolutely.
And how often do we meet people? You know, I didn't let him into school because I knew I was going to change his life someday, and that was for him to do. But he needed to have a chance.
Mm-hmm.
And how often do we deal with people like that?
Mm-hmm.
He's a teenager. Yeah. He was a teenager. How much is he going to listen? You don't know what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But that one little thing made such a
difference. And you were blessed.
Yeah. I walked away.
You were blessed.
My, teachers make a lot of money.
Yeah. Yeah.
How do you put a price on it?
Mm-hmm.
That is the reward. Mm-hmm. I'm old enough, I can say this. That is the reward of years in teaching.
Absolutely.
Here's what somebody says, something like that.
Absolutely. See, Paul had that experience. Why? Because he knew what it was like for him when he accepted Christ. He had come to that experience. So the joy every time that someone came to Christ was because it renewed his experience. That young man, or I don't know how young he is now, but that man that came up to you said, "You believed in me. You did something that changed my life." That renewed things, because there's been people in your life that have done that. And that's the beauty of the message of Paul. It says, everybody, it's the renewing. And that's what happens. Go ahead.
That's a really good testimony, I would say. How many times do we give up on people? How many times do we give up on a family member, on a friend, that, I'm not going to deal with them anymore?
Mm-hmm.
Because we feel like we're trying to, give them advice or whatever, mm-hmm. and they don't follow. And we give up, and yet we forget that the grace that God has given us, God is always, continuing to work in us.
Absolutely.
So it's good to know that, to believe and give people a second chance, and know mm-hmm. to pray for that, and continue doing what Paul was saying as you were reading.
Absolutely. Now see, what Paul, you could read this, what I read, and say, Paul is wishy-washy. Paul is a chameleon. He'll go wherever he is. And was that true about Paul? Absolutely. But remember what the last thing he said is. It's all to help them so they'll understand Christ. And that, that's the interesting thing. How I look for common ground. Now, is that something we can say about the Seventh-day Adventist Church historically? Sadly, no. We want to separate ourselves. So what we're hoping is that we start realizing how we can connect with understanding. I have the opportunity as a therapist to see a lot of different people in a lot of different ways. And I had a priest come to see me recently, and then a minister. I don't sit there and say, well, let's sit there and let's talk about the names of God. No. What's going on with you? Let's talk about your life. Let's talk about what's brought you here. And then things can develop. That's what Paul understood. He understood that it's about knowing how to connect with people. And through that connection, things can happen. We regulate ourselves all the time in this world, don't we? Think about it. Don't you have the times where your emotions rise and you're feeling dysregulated? What helps you to regulate?
Right here, down at the bottom of your quarterly.
What helps you to regulate, Jim?
It says Seventh-day Adventist Church.
Okay. Okay, but we're talking about regulation. How do we regulate ourselves? What do we do to regulate ourselves? What do you guys do? You pray? Okay. Okay, so that's for you. How about the rest of you? What do you do to regulate? You know what I do? Exactly what we're doing here is connecting with others. People help me regulate. Prayer can help you regulate. The belief, God, nothing can separate me from the love of God, that's helping regulation. It's interesting to think about how we help ourselves to regulate. Yesterday we were talking, they were talking about children and how we help children regulate. Think about that. How do we work with the kids to help them regulate themselves? Got several hands. I'll come to you, Robbie, and then go over here.
I was thinking about, we were talking about how it comes all things, all people. One of the stories for me that epitomizes that in Paul's life is he's walking into a city and he notices a god, a statue. I don't look it up. And it's the unnamed god. And he uses that. He sees that and he says, instead of, well, that's just, you know, pagan whatever, you know, he uses something that they know very well and says, well, let me introduce you to this god that you don't know and you don't know the name for, you don't know anything about. Let me introduce you to this god. And he uses something that they know very clearly.
Concretely, absolutely.
To point them to Christ.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That common ground. Look to understand. Go ahead. You had your hand up.
Well, I was just going to say, for me personally, there's an order of events. You ask what grounds me, what regulates me, that sort of thing. And it has to be God first because I don't care about the people. I have to do the first thing first. You know, no apple testimony. You know, by myself, I'm selfish. I have wrong motives and all those sorts of things. If I don't ground myself in the Word and God before I connect to other people, it's not.
Not a pretty sight. So all of us, go ahead.
I think it's interesting that Paul was the ultimate legalist, right? And when he got Jesus, all those rules that had bound him before were suddenly gone. Because it was about people. And so he had freedom to love that divine Christ-like love. He wasn't bound by anything. Yes, he had been.
Absolutely, yeah. He was a studied, well-read, knowledgeable individual about the Bible. But he had missed one thing. That's the love of God. And boy, if you miss that, that's a scary person to be around. Because in that love is where you understand all those truths become understood. First,
what he said in 1 Corinthians 13, that, and now this dream remains faith, hope, and love, and the greatest of this and love.
Absolutely. That whole first chapter of 13, everything comes back to understanding. If you don't understand the love of God, you are nothing. I mean, it's just phenomenal when you come back to understand that. And that's what helped regulate him. That's what helped put him in a place where he then could say, you know, I do everything through God who strengthens me. Because he understood where that came from. In 1 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 18, I know very well how foolish it sounds to those who are lost when they hear that Jesus died to save them. But we who are saved recognize this message as the very power of God. For God says, I will destroy all human plans of salvation, no matter how wise they seem to be, and ignore the best ideas of men, even the most brilliant of them. I will destroy all plans of salvation. Doesn't, you know, and think about, wait, don't we like to know what we can do ourselves? Oh, what am I going to do? You know, I've got to figure out what to do. So what about these wise men, these scholars, these brilliant debaters of the world's great affairs? You know, this political season coming up. These things going on, everyone's debating what the answer is. And it's humorous when you really understand and believe God's in control of this world. You know, I think we all have responsibilities as citizens to make an informed choice about what we think's the best direction. But if you think someone's going to answer these world's issues, wow, I'm come see me. Because... Because it really, you really recognize there's some answers that you're not going to, we're not going to come about. God has made them look all foolish. Oh, so who are, what about these wise men, these scholars, these brilliant debaters of this world's great affairs? God has made them look all foolish and shows their wisdom to be useless nonsense. For God in his wisdom saw to it that the world would never find God through human brilliance. Never find God through human brilliance. And then he stepped in and saved all those who believed his message, which the world calls foolish and silly. And think about who he was talking to. The Jewish people. What were their whole emphasis? We have had all these terrible things happen to us as a nation because we have not followed God's rules. We have not done the perfect job of being the kind. And you know, that was the belief at that time. If we could just, for one day, all be perfect, and then we'd be a great nation again. So they were struggling. The Jewish mind was such that they were trying to understand that. And then the Greeks, they were trying to understand human intellect, how to come to the great understanding of human minds. So you look at these two groups of individuals Paul was dealing with. He was trying to get them to understand. It seems foolish to the Jews because they want a sign from heaven. They were used to signs. That's what they had been experienced their whole history. Led children of Israel led out of Egypt. All these great signs. And, you know, imagine now they look back and say, oh, those people back there, how could they have missed it? Their God was leading them. That's the tendency. It's always easier to look back upon what I did and what I should have done back there. Or about those other people. It seems foolish, Jews, because they want a sign from heaven as a proof that what is preached is true, and it is foolish to the Gentiles because they only believe what agrees with their philosophy and seems wise to them. So when we preach about Christ dying to save them, the Jews are offended and the Gentiles say it's all nonsense. But God has opened the eyes of those called to salvation, both Jews and Gentiles, to see that Christ is mightily a power of God to save them. Christ himself is the center of God's wise plan for their salvation. This so-called foolish plan of God is far wiser than the wisest plan of the wisest man. And God in his weakness, Christ dying on the cross, is far stronger than any man. If you really recognize some of the dynamics that's taken place in this world from the beginning with Adam and Eve and how they broke a relationship. And in that broken relationship, trauma was experienced. Where was evidence of the trauma? Suddenly they knew they were naked. Suddenly they were scared of the voice of God. Suddenly they wanted to hide. Suddenly they were wanting to be away from God. Where prior to that, it was a joy to be with God. So you understand that dynamic. And the thousands of years up to this point, God is bringing us back in that connection. And how do you bring someone back in connection after a trauma experience? You create a relationship. You start working with the narrative of that trauma. You start helping that individual work through their life experience. And then you start challenging some of the beliefs that they have about that experience. And then as you challenge those beliefs, suddenly you start realizing, oh, nothing can separate me from the love of God. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. Suddenly you start recognizing what does create regulation in your life. And then suddenly the voice of God is not something that frightens you. It can overwhelm you initially. It can stimulate a little uncomfortableness. But then you recognize, oh, God, this is the God I've been waiting for. So if you recognize this, you can see all of what Paul's doing and talking about is how he came into a regulated experience with God. And what do we want to do when we have something that's adversely affected us? We want to figure out how never to have it again. So like the people after the flood, what did they do? Let's build a big tower so we can make sure we'll never have this happen again. We have some dynamic occur. Let's figure out a way to make sure this never happens again. That's humanity. That's our tendency. But God, in His understanding as the creator of humanity, He knew what it took to bring us back in connection. So when people come to me and say, well, why did this happen? Or why did this? Or why did so-and-so have to happen? God is bringing everybody back into connection that wants to be connected. And I think that's why when Paul's message could be summed up, it's the cross of Jesus, the crucifixion of Christ. Because he came to recognize that through that cross, through that life, through that understanding, it came to him to help them understand who God is. And if he could understand who God is, nothing else matters. You know, he used a lot of analogies of competition, sports analogies. I fight the race. I do all of these things. He understood how to connect with people. And he understood what the purpose of all this was, is to bring us back into connection with God. Therefore, he wasn't worried about this ceremonial law or this. How did it bring him to connection with God? You know, the Ten Commandments. What is the Ten Commandments for? It's a statement of what it's going to look like when you're in a connection with God. What do we make the Ten Commandments to be? Something we got to do to get to God. What a tragedy. And Paul understood that. He wasn't here to abolish those principles. He was here to say, let's make sure we understand until you belong, until you believe. We don't need to talk about behavior. It's funny how oftentimes we'll start talking about behavior as a way to belong. We'll talk about behavior I now believe because look at my behavior. Instead of believing and belonging and in behavior. So,
you can be believing and belonging even while you're still struggling with that.
Absolutely. Stuff. Absolutely.
And have a genuine experience.
Absolutely. You know, Paul understood it was God and the love of God that was bringing about these changes. He knew he was a part of it, but he knew where to direct it. He knew the process. And he wasn't interested in the product. He wanted to create a process that would continue. Because in that way, when you're in that process, that's the only way this world's ever going to be secure, is because we're in that connection, connected relationship. It's not in doing one day of perfection. It's not in doing one event. It's in a relationship, a connection that you then can experience. I'm okay. I can regulate myself. I'm in a regulated experience with others. Think about all of the things in our life that we do to regulate ourselves in our relationships with each other, in our families, in our church experience. We find ways to regulate ourselves. And Paul in this thing recognized that Jesus was the ultimate example of what God is willing to do to save each one of us. And that was the thing that came out every time he had an opportunity. He wasn't trying to win a debate. He did that. He wasn't trying to prove this. He was saying, look at what's happened to my life. And I think that's really what all of us have in our life, is what the love of God has done for us. Shall we pray? Dear God, we're so grateful that Paul responded to your opportunity, and that he recognized what it was to feel loved and to understand your love for him. And then you can see that so evident, God, in his love for all the churches he worked with. May we as a church experience that love in our among ourselves, and it radiate from out of this church. Thank you for everyone here, and that all we all have the opportunity to come together. In your holy name, amen.